Welcome to Echo Zoe Radio. I'm your host, Andy Olson, proprietor of EchoZoe.com. I want to thank everyone who listened to the first episode last month and express my gratitude for coming back for another episode. I also want to thank everyone who responded with comments and constructive criticism. This being a new venture for me, I'm still ironing out a lot of the details and learning new things very quickly. This is, of course, episode number 2 for June 2008. And for this episode, I'm glad to have my good friend Mark Huffman as my guest. Mark is a full-time missionary in Odessa, Ukraine, a major city located on the Black Sea. Today, we're going to talk about Mark's experiences in the former Soviet Union. We'll talk about life in Ukraine after the fall of communism, as well as some of the challenges and opportunities Mark faces in his missions work there. This interview was conducted Sunday, June 1st, and I want to apologize ahead of time for the audio quality. The interview was conducted via internet phone, so it presented new challenges not faced in the previous interview with Bob DeWay, which was done face-to-face across my kitchen table. Again, thanks for listening. Here's the interview, and I hope you enjoy it. Welcome, Mark. Thanks for being on the second episode of the podcast.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It's great to be here and great to be talking with you and your listeners as well.
So how's Ukraine today? You said you had a busy day.
Yeah, Sundays are busy. Well, weekends are busy. That's when people have time to meet with us and us with them. So it was a pretty full day. My family and I left about 8:40 this morning, and we got home about 8:40 tonight. So we're gone about 12 hours. But it was a good day, a lot of ministry, and so really thankful. Got to also spend several hours at the sea, which is always nice. You know, Odessa is right on the north shore of the Black Sea, and so we had a picnic down there. You know, it's the school year is coming to an end, and we have an English club that meets every Sunday afternoon, and so for our last event of the year, well, the school year anyway, we had a picnic down by the sea. It was really nice.
Fun.
Yeah, beautiful day, and got a little wet, not from the sea, but from rain. Some dark clouds came through, but had a nice group. Several people we were hoping would come, you know, weren't there, but kind of a typical group for us. I teach at a university here, and so several university students, a few that are pretty fluent in English, and a few that just want to learn more English.
Sure.
Come quite regularly, and we're there today. So we played some games, played some English games as well, and had some fun.
How's your Russian, speaking of their English?
Oh, my Russian. I'm too busy. My Russian's not very good.
Well, you were picking up pretty good for a while.
It's a hard language.
Yeah,
and I can. You know, I know enough to survive, so I can go shopping. I can get around town. You know, tell a taxi driver or the bus driver where to stop, where I want to get off. But you know, to have a conversation other than just being nice, I lose people pretty quickly, or they lose me pretty quickly. You know, I can introduce myself, and I can understand when people introduce them to me, and I can tell people what I do for a living, and they can tell me, and I usually understand, unless they do something really strange. But then they often lose me pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But Russian's a pretty tough language.
Well, it's not a Romance language, so you don't have that benefit from the outset.
There's so much
a meld of Romance and Germanic. You're in a different, be like learning Chinese, I suppose.
Yeah, it's a Slavic language. We use a Cyrillic alphabet, so we have 32 letters in the alphabet and about 6 sounds that are not in the English alphabet that are just totally different. And so even, depends on the Ukrainian I'm talking to. Well, Odessa is a Russian-speaking city. Ukrainian is the official language of Ukraine, but kind of the eastern half of Ukraine is more Russian. And Odessa is kind of in the middle, but they're Russian-leaning as well. So we speak Russian here. And so it's the six sounds we have a hard time saying are difficult. And some Ukrainians seem to understand what I say, and some have no clue what I say at times. But
yeah. Well, before we go too
far, I also don't actually. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I was saying I don't get a lot of opportunity to speak Russian because I work with a lot of English-speaking people, and they work with me because they want to practice their English.
Sure.
A native English speaker. And so they say, oh, Mark, speak English, please.
So. Yeah. You need a like an assistant that you can bring around with you that can interpret for you.
Oh, I have actually a lot of translators. It's been a real blessing. You know, our ministry partners that we work with primarily here, his name is Arkady, her name is Annika. He knows, well, at least five languages fluently, and a couple others, you know, he can get by with. So he's an amazing talent, an amazing translator.
But I've heard from a lot of polyglots that once you learn that second language, that the rest just follow really simple. So just having, even if he doesn't know Russian that well, just having all those other languages give him a substantial advantage in learning that language.
So,
before we go too far, I wanted to ask you what it was that brought you to Ukraine. You've been doing some missions work.
Well, that's a good question.
A couple years now? A few years now?
Yeah, I started my first time to Ukraine was in 2002, and at that time I had a consulting business, mostly technology and computers, and a good friend of mine had been coming to Ukraine for a while. Well, I guess at that time he was just a friend, and the church that I was also pastoring, a small church, a new church, and we had gotten to the point where we're actively looking for some mission opportunities, some missionaries to support. And this friend of mine had been coming to Ukraine, and I had lunch with him one day, and he said, Mark, one of my biggest needs right now in Ukraine is this church I'm working with wants to start an internet club. He said, do you know anyone that would have, you know, 8 or 10 older model computers that they would just want to donate, you know, to this church to start this internet club? And we were sitting at Perkins.
He knew who he was asking.
Yeah. We were sitting at Perkins, and my truck was out in the parking lot, and I had 10 computers that I'd just taken from a client that morning, because I had put 10 brand new computers in there, and all these computers worked perfectly fine. They were just slightly outdated, but they were exactly what he was looking for.
Wow.
And he said, oh, Mark, that's just great. Would you happen to know anybody that could come to Ukraine and help set them up? So, yeah, probably a month later, we got here talking with my wife and family and talking to the church and looking at some other opportunities that we were weighing. No, actually, it was probably 3 months later, now that I think about it. I was on an airplane coming over to Odessa, Ukraine, with a couple suitcases full of computer parts, and spent a week here setting up the internet club. During the day, I would go from like 7 in the morning till 7 at night, and then the evenings I would lead some Bible studies at this church and just do some teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first missions trip, and my first time I'd used a translator, and Arkady was my translator, who's our ministry partner here now.
Mm-hmm. Where's Arkady from?
And he's from Western Ukraine.
Okay.
So very close to the border of Slovakia and Poland.
Okay.
Which is a part of why he speaks so many languages. So he speaks Ukrainian and Russian because he grew up in Ukraine. Slovakia, because that was just a stone throw away one direction, and Polish because that was two throws, so someone throws the other direction. And he also knows some Hungarian because he's pretty close to Hungary in that area as well.
Sure.
So it's an amazing thing, and me being a monolingual American, I have a hard time with this language stuff. So.
Yeah.
So that was our first time here. And after that, our church decided to get more involved in this ministry because things went really well, and we were impressed with what was going on in the church and with this ministry. And we started then doing English camps here in Ukraine, evangelistic English camps. Mm-hmm. And my family came over on, I think, three of those. We'd come for 10 days. We'd be gone from America for 2 weeks. We'd spend 10 days in camp just teaching conversational English to Ukrainians. And we'd use the Bible to do that. You know, basically do a Bible study with one of the English classes and just sit and talk about the Bible. And it's an amazing thing because many of those people had never studied the Bible before. And right. Just to have that privilege to sit down with them for the first time and have their eyes and see even their hearts opened to the Word of God is an amazing thing.
Well, how does their these people mostly have a background in communism, atheism. How does that does that help then their openness now that the Iron Curtain's down?
You know, it did in the 90s when the communism fell in 91. This is what I told. I wasn't around here then. But in the early 90s, yeah, there was just, you know, like someone turned on a huge vacuum because God was illegal here for 70 years. Mm-hmm. And now people had freedom. And so people were just looking. They were hungry. They wanted to find the truth. They wanted to know what was out there. You know, they wanted to know what their options were. And so for several years, there was just a great hunger and people just sucking everything in from everywhere. Mm-hmm. Including all the cults and including all false teachers and all that as well.
You get a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses there now.
Yeah, they stop by our place often. Well, our old apartment, we have security now at our new one, so they don't let them in anymore. But our old one, you know, probably once a month, a Jehovah's Witness would come by. Mm-hmm. And there's a big Mormon church less than a mile from our home.
Okay.
Big, beautiful Mormon church. And in the summers, there'll be a lot of American Mormons just out walking the streets and surveying people. And they speak very good Russian. They teach them very well in Utah. And they're out sharing their message to whomever will listen.
Sure.
So there was a great hunger in the 90s, but now, you know, the God in Ukraine is materialism. Definitely, especially Odessa. Mm-hmm. More so than probably, well, Kiev was a huge God there. Kiev and Odessa, it's materialism.
Sure.
And so I know people that have no money, but they drive, you know, a 2-year-old Mercedes.
Wow.
We had one neighbor. There were 8 people living in a one-room apartment, well, one room and a kitchen. And that one room was probably, I would say, about 12 feet by 20 feet.
Wow.
Not any bigger than that. And a small kitchen. 8 people living in there, but they drove, you know, a 2-year-old Mercedes. You know, they had no money, and that apartment was empty.
Yeah, it sounds like just enough room for 8 people to lay down and sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a whole lot left.
Well, there was nothing in there. There was a couch and a table. And
wow.
2 little kids and no toys you could see. There was a little cupboard, so maybe they had some toys in there. But, but that car meant everything to them, because that's what people saw them in around town. And I know of other cases like that, too. Very common. People will have really nice clothes, but they only have 1 or 2 sets of nice clothes. So you'll see, you know, this girl in this nice outfit or this guy in this nice suit, but that's all you ever see him in. Mm. No matter where you are or what you're doing, he has that fancy suit on because that's all he has. Mm. But it's very important. You know, it could have been a suit that he, you know, spent 6 months' salary on.
Yep.
But it was important to him because how you look here is very important.
Yeah.
So materialism is a big thing, and there's a lot of nice cars here in Odessa, but parked at a lot of homes that I wouldn't want to go into either.
Yeah.
And you see that in people's desires, their dreams. You know, a lot of them, their biggest dream is to go to America and get a job because they think that that is paradise,
mm-hmm.
to be able to get, you know, a job getting paid 10, 15 bucks an hour. You know, that would be paradise.
Hmm.
They don't understand that it costs a lot more to live in America than it does here. But,
so going back to the English clamps.
Yeah.
You were doing these English camps, and you brought your family over, and what was it that took you from doing a biweekly or two-week-long English camp in the summer to mm-hmm. deciding that the five of you, you've got three sons?
Yeah, yeah.
To bring them over and just live there full-time and do this as a full-time job?
There were a lot of things involved in that process. You know, I've always had a heart for missions. I grew up in a church that had a great heart for missions, but didn't necessarily have planned to be one myself. But I really started to be challenged in that area. I started reading some, my wife and I together, Kim and I, started reading a lot of missionary biographies together, just, you know, to have some fun, and they were exciting to be able to do something together. And it started to capture our hearts, the idea of missions. And started, you know, just hearing, just picking up things here and there. Just, you know, like I listened to a couple sermons from John Piper, and in there he had some challenges about not wasting our life. I think this was before he came out with that book, Don't Waste Your Life. And he himself, I remember him saying once, he was challenged every year that he had to spend time in prayer with his wife to see whether God was calling them to go to Africa or to go to someplace to be a missionary. And that really challenged me because I thought, here am I, you know, I'm a pastor as well and a church planter, but it was just a small church, but actually a stable, growing church, very healthy. And I just, it's not time, I can't just sit back and say, okay, I've done my job, you know, Lord, I can coast now. You know, John Piper has this great successful ministry, and he's challenged with that thought. I need to be challenged with that, too. And so Kim and I started just really, you know, seeking God's will for our lives in prayer, and doing more reading and studying. And one thing I remember reading, I was reading a biography about Lottie Moon, who was the first single female that the Southern Baptist Church sent out. They had always sent out married couples. That was kind of their policy. And this was just after the Civil War. And she was a teacher at a university. I think it was a Bible college. And she decided she was going to go to China and be a missionary. And, you know, the Southern Baptists thought she was crazy. She had a great ministry going there. It wasn't standard for them to send a single woman to the mission field. And she got a letter from her sister. Her sister was married and already living in China. Wrote her a letter and said, Lottie, you know, you are the most educated woman in the South. That was her reputation, that she was, you know, the most educated, one of the best teachers in the entire South in America. So, you know, you're the most educated woman in the South. But she said, there are hundreds of women that will do your job that you're doing there now, but who will come and tell the people in China about Christ? And Lottie realized that nobody would. That if she didn't go, no one would go. And that her sister was right, that someone could easily step in and take her job and do her job there at that school, but no one was going to China. And that's really much how I felt. You know, our church was doing well, it was stable, and that there were at least 100 men that would be love to come to a church like this and could probably do much more with it than what I was doing as a shepherd there. But who was going to come to Odessa, Ukraine, and share Christ with these people? Man, no one. No one was lying. There was no line waiting to come to Odessa.
Well, I know I commend you very much, and that's a large reason why I wanted to have you on, not only as a friend, but as a brother in Christ. I just commend you for taking that step and making that sacrifice, and I just think it's wonderful. And,
well, thanks. I hope,
for one, I'm very glad that you've done it.
Thank you. We've appreciated your encouragement and your support in our time here. I think in, what, like 11 more days, we'll have been here for 2 years. And and yeah, it's just, it has been God's grace that got us here, and that's been keeping us here. And there's so many things that could go wrong, but we can see it's God behind it, God behind us. So we're thankful to Him for giving us this opportunity.
Amen.
Because it takes a team. It takes a team. And we've got, you know, several churches and a lot of individual families that are keeping us here financially, but even more so that I know are praying for us regularly. And helping us fight this fight. You know, Odessa is a really dark city. I found it even more so. I knew that coming here before we moved here, but now that we've been living here, I've seen that even more and more. And Ukrainians tell me that. People that are from outside of Odessa, they'll even say that, how Odessa is such a tough area. And it's... And I can see it now that we've been here, too.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, tell us a little bit about that. I know you've given some stories in the past, but I think you've probably got more stories to tell now that you've been there a while.
Yeah, I think it comes back to the materialism issue in that, you know, Odessa is a major seaport for Ukraine, and Ukraine used to be a part of Russia as well. It wasn't just a Soviet state, but it was actually part of the country of Russia. And it was one of the biggest ports for Russia, too. And so it's always had a connection, you know, to the rest of the world. So even under communism, there was a lot of outside influence from the world. And therefore, a lot of materialistic desires and tendencies, too. And that's very much, you know, still here, even more so than the rest of Ukraine. And our neighborhood that we're in, we live in a neighborhood of about a quarter of a million people. I'd say, as no one really knows for sure, between 200 to 300,000 people. And it's a very compact neighborhood. And we live in a building, it's typical communist block buildings in this whole neighborhood. So we live in a building that has probably 1,500 to 2,000 people living in our building. And you know, the town we came from, central Minnesota, had 1,300 people living in it. And, you know, now we have as many people living in our building that lived in our whole town before. And there is only, that we're aware of, one home church in this entire neighborhood that preaches the gospel in this area of a quarter of a million people. Which is just unbelievable to me.
Yeah, we really take it for granted here that we can just... The church is on every block still, you know. America's a lot less friendly to the gospel than it used to be, but we can still go just about anywhere to find a church.
Yeah.
Not necessarily a good church, but there's
Well, and there are a couple churches on kind of the very edge of our neighborhood that they're churches and have been there and they don't preach the gospel. You know, they've added on to it.
Uh-huh.
And maybe we can get into some of that in a little bit, too. You know, they tend to be real legalistic, and they've added a lot of works onto the gospel. And that's really a tragedy. And it's, you know, sat in some of those churches and heard some of those messages, and well, you just want to cry. You really do. So this neighborhood, yeah, there's this, you know, no gospel witness in an area where there's just people constantly. You know, you go out on the streets and there's people everywhere. You know, it quiets down you know, 1, 2, 3 in the morning, but then it starts back up at 6, 7 in the morning again. And it's really that we found that we are the 13th missionary team in this neighborhood trying to plant a church. The others have all come and gone without starting a church.
Wow.
And this is really, this is a concrete neighborhood. There are trees and things around, but yeah, most of this neighborhood is concrete. But we found that the people's hearts are just as hard as this concrete that we have in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, and some of that is, this is considered more of an upper middle class neighborhood. Not by American standards by any means, but the people here are pursuing, you know, getting a bigger TV, getting a newer computer, or maybe getting a car someday, and that's what they're pursuing. So they're working harder, working long hours, and aren't interested in Christ. And I think another aspect to this neighborhood, the darkness in this neighborhood, is there's a, on the very south edge of it, there's a huge Orthodox monastery that impacts this neighborhood as well. I think spiritually and just their influence politically and socially here too, that is impacting the gospel here in a spiritual way.
Sounds like a good segue. You've talked to me and then before other groups that I've come and listened to you speak about the Orthodox Church and how it was able to kind of hold on through the communist decades, and it's still there, and it's still a presence. Tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, Orthodoxy went through a lot of persecution in the early years of communism. You know, I think back especially like in the late 20s and the 30s, 1930s. But there were some very, I guess I can't say wise, maybe it's like crafty people involved in the Orthodox Church, and also very powerful. They had, you know, some political pull and also a fair amount of money involved. And so, you know, my impression is the Orthodox Church really got involved in politics, and that's how they were able to survive. They were willing and able to change their message enough to make the true politicians happy. And also then able to control the people enough to use that for political advantage as well. And so what has happened is that has just made Orthodoxy even more nominal than Christianity in America. Like, I have students at the university that I teach at that, and I've met people even in the street that I've talked with that will say that they are Orthodox, but they will also say that they're atheists. And it's like, well, how does that work? In fact, when the first few times that happened, I thought they didn't understand me or their English wasn't very good, so you know, I went to find a translator or just tried to clarify myself, and they'd be like, no, I know what you're talking about, but I'm Orthodox, but I'm also atheist. And because their family is Orthodox, some of them, they say they're Orthodox because they were baptized in the Orthodox Church, so of course I'm Orthodox, but they don't believe anything
sure.
The Orthodox Church believes. Because it's
sure.
It's more of a cultural thing than it even is a religion to people. So I've had people, when I tell them, when we've talked about the gospel and got in deeper about sharing the gospel and Christ with them, that they're interested in that, and they say, "Wow, but I really shouldn't be talking about this because I'm Orthodox and my parents are Orthodox, and I'll just always be Orthodox."
Wow.
But I challenge them because they have no idea that what the gospel is about is a relationship. And that when we look in Scripture, it's about God made us to have a relationship with us. And they have no concept of that. And no idea of that. So it's... it's quite an intellectual challenge for them and a spiritual challenge, of course, to begin thinking about God in a very different way than just some guy that you got to please so you don't spend eternity in hell, to someone that wants a relationship with me, wants to be really be my father, and wants to be my friend. And so it's really sad. You see all this power, you see this money that the Orthodox Church has, and you know they're leading people to hell as well. And that's a controversial subject for some, I realize. Maybe not for you and me, Andy, but maybe some of your listeners. But you know, you look, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one comes to the Father except through me. And the Orthodox Church would agree with that. But then they'll say, but also, and right there, they have nullified what Christ said. When they add that but to it, they're changing the gospel. And right. You can't do that.
Yep.
They'll add, you have to add the church, the traditions of the church, and you add this, blah, 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 blah. And that's not the gospel anymore. And if it's not the gospel, you don't lead people to Christ. And you know, there's just two ways. And there's either you go to heaven or you go to hell. And so that's where they're leading people. So it's... And now today, it's even more so in Russia than it is Ukraine. The Orthodox Church has a lot of power and a lot of clout. And I haven't felt any of this here in Odessa. And I think some of that, the Orthodox Church doesn't have a lot of power here in Odessa because of the worldliness here, unlike much of the rest of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
But I have heard stories of, you know, Orthodox priests pretty much running towns and running smaller cities. I have a Baptist church that we've done some work with, and the pastor there is a friend of mine, and they outgrew their building. They were at like three services. They were just meeting in a house that they had taken all the walls out of, and they wanted to build a building. In fact, they were raising money for it, and had bought some land, but the Orthodox priests heard about it, and then all of a sudden they could not get any building permits from the city. So the city had like a big cultural center that they could meet, that people could rent. So they started renting that, so they'd have more room for everyone. And that went just fine until the Orthodox priests heard about it. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't available for rent on Sunday mornings anymore. You know, no one else was using it. It just wasn't available anymore. So they weren't going to give up. They bought this huge tent, and they put that up on this land that they had bought, and they started meeting there in the summers, and and kept meeting that way for a while until eventually they were just praying and kept working on the officials and finally got the permits so they could start building their building and building a bigger building for them to work on. But it was a several-year battle against the Orthodox Church in order to get this done.
Well, it's good to hear they prevailed in the end.
Yeah, yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of the stories aren't that way.
Yeah. Can imagine.
The other thing the Orthodox Church has been very good at doing is classifying anything that's not from the Orthodox Church is considered a cult here.
Uh-huh.
So if it's Baptist, Lutheran, Presbyterian, anything, it's called a cult. And that's just the accepted use of that word, the accepted use of that word in Ukraine.
Does that pose legal challenges then? Is Ukraine a country that clamps down on cults? You know, we hear stories about Scientology, for instance, being considered a cult in Germany and basically banned. Do you face that challenge there?
No, because there is, and I think, pretty true freedom of religion in Ukraine.
Okay, that's good to hear.
So that's why we have all these other strange groups here too. So.
Yeah.
But they still would call it a cult.
Okay. Along the same lines, I guess that's kind of getting into persecution, which I wanted to talk to you about, in that you do face some challenges, and it's good to hear that at least you have the legal right to be there. But you know, what kind of persecution do you find as an American being there, first of all, and then what kind of persecution would Ukrainians face when they come to Christ?
Mm-hmm. As an American, you know, it's a pretty good time. That's actually changed, I think, in the last couple of months, maybe a little. It's a pretty good time to be an American in our world today. There's just such a huge desire for people and perhaps a need to learn English and to know English well so you can do business in the world. That, you know, if you are an English teacher or if you have a certificate to teach English as a second language, you can go almost to any country and get a job pretty easily. And so if you're interested in going to missions and interested in English at all, you know, get that teaching English as a second language certificate and the doors will open. You can go about anywhere.
What do you do to get a certificate?
You know, there's actually some online classes that you could, you know, someone could probably pass in a couple of months if you have a basic understanding of English, that you could probably do that in 3 or 4 months and get this certificate. You know, I know the popular one around here is from Cambridge University, and that may be a little tougher because that's British English, but I'm sure there's also similar ones in America, get that certificate and
some you probably
and go and teach somewhere. Yeah. I've considered looking into getting that, but right now I've got too many opportunities with just my limited credentials that I have that I don't really need it.
Well, that's good.
So, yeah. And I don't really, I'm not into English all that much. I struggled with English, you know, all through high school and into college as well. I hated those classes. So it's interesting. So it's really, that's why I went the route of computer industry.
How I got into writing a blog and now doing a podcast, I don't know, because I had the same same deal. I never liked English.
Yeah, so you can relate. And now here, I teach English at a university. So it's strange.
Do they place limitations on you there as far as ministry when you're teaching? You know, here if you tried to share the gospel in any way, shape, or form in a university, unless it's a private Christian university, you'd be run out. Do you face that there?
Yeah, well, I teach at a private Christian university.
Okay.
So I have had some problems. I don't know how specific I can be. I guess, you know, there's probably no one from my university will ever listen to this. So no offense. I don't want to name names, but yeah, there are several about. It's a Christian university, but I'd say about 15% of my students are believers.
Yeah.
And there are, what can I say, not very many
believers
on staff.
It sounds like Ukraine's a lot like America in a lot of ways.
Yeah. I would say a majority of the staff and faculty are not believers either. So it's a Christian university and by two reasons. So what makes it special? Well, and I'll add a third one, which the university wouldn't appreciate. The first is that it's supported by Christians in Vienna, or from Austria and America, financially.
Mm-hmm.
That's what keeps it going. So it's Christian because Christians pay for it. And secondly, it's Christian in that all of the students have to take a Bible class every semester.
Okay.
So they know that coming in, you got to do that. Thirdly, it's Christian, which means the bribes are lower than what they are at the government universities.
The bribes are lower.
Yeah, because the professors have more grace than they do in the public universities. So they have a requirement. The university has a requirement that they have to have someone to teach these Bible classes every semester, and so that's what I do. I
You're
teach
fortunate to be in the Bible
in
class.
So I teach in the International Business Program. I have about 100 students, first year through third year students, that I teach. And I preach the gospel to them every week.
That's wonderful.
And I have them write papers on what is the gospel, and what is atheism, and why, what do you believe, why do you believe, and get them to wrestle with these issues. I would say a third of my students have never read the Bible before until they come to my class their freshman year. Another third have never studied the Bible before. They've maybe read it or been to church when someone was married or when someone was, they had a nephew that was baptized or something. So they heard it, but had never studied it. And then of that other third that's left, about half of them are believers, and the other half, maybe grew up in nominal Christian homes and don't know Christ. Or maybe they grew up in great Christian homes but still don't know Christ.
Sure.
And so that's kind of the breakdown of my students.
Do you have opportunity then to share the gospel by first giving them law? I know you and I have talked. You get a chance from time to time to watch Ray Comfort on satellite TV, and so you've got for that law and the gospel message. Does that go over well there?
I'm really hoping this next year that I can do what I want to do is in universities they'd usually call it an Old Testament survey, but what I really want to do is just go start from creation and go all the way to Christ in the course of the year, and I want to do that with my second and third year university students, and that I think is going to be ideal. Revelation of the gospel. We walk through to the creation of the law and the law of itself and then Israel's failure and failure and failure and failure to do the law and how that just points out the need for Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And then to get to, May of next year and finally reveal Christ and the gospel to these students. That's what I'm hoping to do. I don't know if that will go over or not with my boss, but we'll see.
Yeah, it seems odd that you'd have difficulty in a Christian school presenting a Christian message, but Ukraine isn't really that much different than the rest of the world in that regard.
Yeah. So I also teach some business classes in the faculty, because the other requirement that they have is that they have native English-speaking professors at this university. And so me being one of them, they also want me to teach some business courses. And so I've done that, but what I try to bring as much of the Bible and biblical principles into doing business. That's how I tried to run my business, that's the best way, obviously, to run a business. And so those are the principles I try to get across to them as well. And I've had some problems with that from some of the staff at the faculty, that I'm preaching too much, talking too much about the Bible. And I ask for specifics, and they can't ever tell me any. What principles are wrong? What things shouldn't I be teaching? And so I have had some problems there. In fact, I've had to change a few of my plans in the past just to go along with them. I want to honor my boss's wishes as well and do a good job in that way. But I still keep Christ in there and still keep those principles. Most of these students have never really been taught anything about business, so they don't know anything different. So sure. An advantage there that as I teach them biblical principles, sometimes I don't even tell them they're biblical principles, they just are. And
right.
I'm teaching them hopefully a good foundation of how to do business, which is quite a challenge. You mentioned persecution for Ukrainians. I haven't felt a lot here personally. There are some people that hate Americans, but overall we're very welcome here. But it's very different for Ukrainians because this is just such a corrupt culture. I even mentioned that at a Christian university that students, expect that they'll be able to pay some money and they'll go from a C to a B or a B to an A. And that's at many universities here, they know what the price is. And
stories I've heard you tell me before, it's not all, maybe not at the Christian university, but in a lot of cases, it's not just paying money. There are other things that can be given to increase one's grade.
Yes, girls have to struggle that with male professors, and so I know of some girls after they came to Christ and realized they couldn't be using their bodies in that way that they had to change their programs, change their universities because there's a couple of professors that they just would not pass, unless they did as he asked. And they have, and everybody knows that. That's just how it is. If you're going to pass that class, you need to go home with him or go to the hotel with him. And, they realized after they came to Christ, they just cannot do that. Mm-hmm. And so they had to change where they're going. So it's difficult for people to come to Christ and then to live as Christ wants them to live here because the corruption is just everywhere. Absolutely everywhere.
Yeah, and we really have to commend them for those girls in that culture. I mean, so often, even in our own culture, we use culture as an excuse to violate our Christian principles. That's really great that their faith is strong enough that they understand that you can't compromise. So, and we should be a prayer for them.
Yeah.
We here in America and to pray for our brothers and sisters in other countries.
Yeah, there's a man, I didn't meet him, but someone was telling me about this man who was a carpenter, and he came to Christ, and he had to go find a new job. And this friend of the friend asked him, well, why? I said, well, he's really not he's paid almost nothing at this job. So what he has always done is, at the end of the day, he grabs a few of the supplies that are there, around the building site and takes them home. Because he will get a lot of odd jobs for neighbors and things on weekends and evenings. And so he knows he has a plumbing job coming up on Saturday and there's some of the plumbing parts he'll need on Saturday there at the construction site. He'll just throw that in his bag and go. And his boss would know that too. His boss knows I pay this guy almost nothing, so I'll let him steal this stuff and then he'll be happy and he'll come back and work for me. But now this guy comes to Christ, and he realizes it's wrong to be stealing. And now he has, how's he going to feed his family? How's he going to pay the electric bill? How is he going to pay his heat bill? Because now he's not going to get these odd jobs anymore because he can't provide the equipment or the products that he needs to do them.
Mm-hmm.
So what does he do? Yeah, he has to quit his job and go find a new job, which is not easy to do here either.
Yeah.
Teachers that take these bribes, they also justify it. I've talked to them, and boy, what am I paid? I'm paid $6 per lecture hour. So if I were to lecture 20 hours a week, which would be a lot, I couldn't do that. I'd be making $120 a week, so $500 a month. The apartment that I rent is $600 a month. How is that going to work? And I'm paid better than the Ukrainian professors because I'm from America. I have a teacher friend who's taught public schools for 35 years, and she's at the top of her pay scale. She makes $200 a month.
Wow.
As a teacher. And I know several professors that make, you know, $300-$400 a month. And it's hard to live on that. Very hard to live on that here. And so they justify it. And they know professors in America get paid easily 10 times what they're paid. Yeah. And so they justify it. Say, I'm worth more than this. And so these students pay me these bribes and I deserve it. You know, and they're in this trap of rationalizing their sin.
Is there any of us that don't do that, though? I would put myself top of the list, especially before I came to Christ, as being a king of rationalizing and justifying just about anything.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and so, that permeates the culture here. And that's one thing I've come to realize, because I've just thought naively before, why don't they just change the laws and wipe out all the corruption? And just stamp out the corruption and that'll be it. If they did that, this country would fall apart. It would not function. Doctors, like a surgeon, is paid $200 to $400 a month. You know, a surgeon. You know, and they're paid just a little bit more than that in America. And they know that. And so it's the same thing. They're back to the bribe system. And so if you need surgery, okay, they'll put you on the waiting list and maybe get to you in 3, 4, 5, 6 months, and we'll let you know. Or you go talk to the doctor and say, okay, you know, I can do this for you, I can do that for you, I can pay a little bit of extra money here, and it's all of a sudden his schedule is free and you'll have the surgery done tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And that's just how it is. And the surgeon justifies that too. And so all of a sudden, and the surgeon, that's how he feeds his families, with those bribes. And so you stamp out bribes, and now everyone is broke, and no one will work anymore, and the country would grind to a halt. Because it's built on over 100 years of corruption. The whole economy was built on this system of corruption.
Well, and they're coming from a background. They're atheists of communism, or specifically the communism, has, especially over the last 70 to 80 years, wiped out those market forces that otherwise would control that here. They're used to just receiving, being dictated what they would be paid, and that's how the market worked around communism when it was in power, was to skirt that through the bribe system, and so that's all they really know.
Yeah. And it's an incredible complex system that has developed around that, too. And so it's not something that can just change overnight. And the government has tried a lot of different policies and a lot of different things that they're still trying today, even to just try to figure this out and to lower the corruption. But the same people that are trying to get rid of corruption are corrupt themselves, so it's very difficult.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the government over there. As I understand, I don't know a lot about it. I know you've spoken in the past when I've come to hear you talk about your experiences and when you were thinking about being a missionary about Ukraine. And I know you once spoke about the Orange Revolution, and I got to be honest, I don't really remember what that was, but maybe you could tell us about the Orange Revolution and what that was and how that affects Ukraine today.
That was really an amazing time in Ukraine. You see, Ukraine has never been independent. Well, until communism fell, it was the first time in history that Ukraine was independent. They've always been ran by their neighbors. And whatever empire was the big power at the time, whether it was the Austro-Hungarian or the Ottoman Empire, the Soviet Union. And so they're used to just this kind of a slave mentality, kind of, okay, whatever we're told to do, we'll do.
Sure.
But in November of, it's been 3 years ago. I'm sorry, I've forgotten now. 2005 or 2004. The people literally took to this.
I was thinking it wasn't that recent, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think it was 2005.
Is that when
people literally?
Yushchenko, is that his name? Was running for president?
Yes. Yeah, was running for president. Yeah, and he was, it was found out that he was poisoned by the his communist competitor and nearly died, but ended up, he had to leave the country for a couple months, and in fact, this poison actually literally changed his appearance. He was like the lead banker of Ukraine, and you know, pretty nice looking guy, but now he's this scarred, his face is full of scars. That changed him quite a bit physically. And several other things were going on. Yeah, this is during this election. And he lost the election. But the people knew that he really had won the election. They just knew from talking to their friends that everybody was voting for him. But there's a lot of corruption involved in the election, and people knew that he really won it. And they were upset. And so the Ukrainians took to the streets by the millions, well, hundreds of thousands, especially in Kiev and the capital, but other cities, even here in Odessa, they were out demonstrating in the streets. And the political, Yushchenko's political party was orange, their color was orange. And so people would wear orange scarves, orange jackets, orange shirts, and that's why it was called the Orange Revolution.
I see.
Not a shot was fired, although it was pretty close at times. The Communist Party was busing in people from the east, which is more Russian backing, closer to Russia. And they even found out later they had Russian troops, so they had them put on civilian clothes, and they were ordering them to get on these buses and come to the Orange Revolution to protest for the other side. So big demonstrations for both sides, Russians actually here as well as Ukrainians. And it was a big call to get rid of corruption. And so for, I don't know how long, I don't follow politics real closely, but for several months, that really seemed to be a new spirit, maybe even up to a half a year or three quarters of a year. There's a new spirit here in Ukraine of real freedom. They're going to stamp out corruption and all of this. But then there started to be rumors and things leaked out of corruption in the Orange Party's government system. A lot of the promises that were made by Yushchenko weren't happening. And they never really established a strong majority control of the parliament, and weren't able to get a lot of their initiatives through and done, and so things just stagnated. And they got some divisiveness within the Orange Party, and the Orange Party actually split into two parties and then no longer had majority control. Now there are three ruling parties in Ukraine, and they could get nothing done because none of them had majority. They had to get the other party on their side in order to pass anything. Cool. And so for quite a long time, nothing was done except for these three parties just argued with each other for, I don't know, maybe a year or so. And that's still kind of going on yet today. There's not a lot being done. They had another election. So for a while, the Orange Revolution was the great hope of the people. It must have been in 2005, because it was not long after we got here. We came not long after that, because people were still pretty hopeful for the Orange Revolution when we were first here. But now, things really just stagnated in Parliament, and they had the split, and kind of back to a three-party system, and no one able to do anything. And so now, for the last year and a half, pretty much nothing has really happened. There was another big election last November, or last fall, and they elected a new prime minister. And I'm sorry, I get them confused. Sometimes they're translated differently from Ukrainian into English too. So Yushchenko is still in power, but now there's this other woman, Tymoshenko, who is also, okay. She won the election. So she's like the most powerful political figure, but she didn't get enough votes in order for herself to have majority to do anything. So her party can do anything on its own. It needs to have one of the other parties working with her, and so they're still just at a stalemate. And the Orange Revolution, the hope of that has really died. And people are just kind of back to their hopelessness again. Thus, a greater need for Christ. And also a greater opportunity, because that's, you know, and we know that our only hope is Christ. And so it's an opportunity then to challenge people deeper than politics and into, you know, what are their deepest desires? Where is their greatest hope? And to get them back to think about Christ and to challenge them with Christ and, you know, where they will spend eternity and what are they living for even today? Is it something bigger than themselves, or is it just their own, you know, selfishness and I would call it humanism?
Well, not to completely change the subject.
So right now that...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to say right now there's not a lot of hope in the government here. So a lot of... And back to that hopelessness.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, not to completely change the subject, but I'm going to completely change the subject. I wanted to ask you about... If there are... You're finding negative influences from Western churches coming into Ukrainian, those that aren't Orthodox churches?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find prosperity gospel or purpose-driven movement or church growth movement, that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's all here. Everything's here. Supposedly, the largest church in Europe is in Kiev.
Oh, yeah?
And it is a prosperity gospel church. The pastor, his last name is Sunday. He's actually an African.
Well, that's really big down there, too.
I don't remember the whole story here. Yeah.
I think the largest church in Africa is in Nigeria, and that's also a prosperity gospel church.
Yeah. That's a huge church. I don't remember the numbers, like 20,000 people.
I think that one in Africa is actually the largest in the world.
Yeah.
But that makes sense. We were saying earlier about materialism being the new religion of Ukraine.
Yeah.
So they find a couple.
You know, in poverty, when you're in poverty and that's a felt need, and now someone has an answer to my biggest felt need of money and wealth, and is just, it sounds so good to so many people, but it's just such a trap. And it doesn't win people to Christ. It wins people to try to solve their problems. And I don't know what they do with passages. You know, Christ said, I'll have to paraphrase it here, but he said, you know, if you want to be a follower of me, you'll have to suffer. And it's like, you know, what do they do with
this? You can only follow one master?
Yeah. So that's big. You know, there's a lot of churches into that, and they hear about the success of this big church in Kiev, and that really driven, you know, their ministries then as well to follow this ministry, and it's sad. It's really sad. And I've even heard about this church in American news sources and Christian American news sources, and it's just the representation of it is sad to hear. Shouldn't surprise us, I guess.
Yeah.
Because they look at numbers, but not at the truth. It's heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking.
Well, it's I think we've been talking for about an hour now, and it's getting kind of late there. I think you're about 10:30 p.m.
Yeah.
Before we go, though, I did want to touch on one more kind of overall subject, and that is what we here in America can be doing to help with the missions work in Ukraine and specifically with your ministry.
Mm-hmm.
I know you contacted me and many others who support you and follow you every year about English camps that you do. Mm-hmm. Are you still looking for people this summer?
It's getting a little late for people to come this summer. It's still possible, but a little late.
Okay.
I know, you know, and essentially we require that you go through some training before you come. It's just a weekend training. And I think our last one in the Midwest was just this weekend.
Okay.
Ended probably a couple hours ago. Just ended, usually around noon on Sunday.
Okay.
But there are still some other training opportunities elsewhere in the country.
Sure.
So it's a little tough, but we can make it happen.
Okay.
If somebody wants it.
Well, and you do these every year, too, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that is one of our greater needs. In fact, our numbers this year are okay. Last year, we maybe had, I would guess, about 45 Americans, and we had some South Africans come as well. Mm-hmm. That came to help us do two English camps. And this year we have about 30.
Oh, wow.
So that's down fairly significantly. And if two Americans come, like a couple comes, we can have up to another 6 or 8 more Ukrainians come to the camp.
Wow.
And so if two people come, it's 8, well, possibly even up to 10. 8 to 10 more Ukrainians can come, or there will spend 10 days interacting with Christians about Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the Bible, seeing Christianity lived out in front of them, because you live with these guys 24 hours a day for 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's had a great impact on people.
Sure.
And that's just a great way to come and to serve. But we've also found that people go back changed. Americans go back changed. That's what happened to me and my family.
Yeah.
And you go back, we send you back better equipped to serve in your church, better equipped to reach out to your neighbors, your coworkers, classmates. So we see it as not only serving the church here in Ukraine, but serving the American church.
Sure.
As a pastor in America, I saw that change in our church. The people that went and served, did short-term missions trips and came back, those ended up being my go-to people in the church.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had been through a lot of things in ministry. And, God, they had been tested, and God had brought them through that, and they were more equipped and ready to serve in America then as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a benefit to the American church and not just our church.
Sure.
We also have a great need of prayer. We're looking at doing some other types of ministries. I'm involved in this fall, we'll be starting, we've had this in the past, but starting at classes again at a missionary training center that we have here. And we need godly men, godly women to come and teach the students that we have come to this course, that are come to this institute, that are looking at going into full-time missions work, or maybe a pastorate, or maybe they're want to be better equipped to be a godly leader in their church.
Mm-hmm.
And we need people to come and teach in these courses as well. And most of all, we need prayer.
Is that also a short-term thing, or is that short and long?
That's short-term. Usually our teachers come for a week. And they'll teach one subject. Maybe you'll teach systematic theology, or you teach evangelism for a week, or you'll teach a book of the Bible for a week.
Oh, wow, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity. We have a lot of people that are interested, but it's just hard to get away.
Yeah.
It's so many people are busy.
Uh-huh.
Our greatest need is prayer, and that's what we need, is prayer. And I try to send out a weekly prayer update, but it doesn't work out quite that way, as you know, Andy.
Uh-huh.
And I would love, if people would like to send me an email just saying, add me to your email updates. I'd love for that to come, and I try to keep things interesting and give people a little snapshot of what's happened here the last couple of weeks, and ask them, invite them to support us in prayer.
Sure. Well, why don't you give your email address then, and how they can do that, and then in addition, I will add that to our, I guess you could call it show notes, to the post that goes up with the podcast.
Sure.
But for those that might maybe get it through iTunes or some other method and don't see the post, how can they reach you?
Sure. The best would be just to send an email message to me at mark@huffmannews.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K. At Huffman is H-U-F-F-M-A-N, the news, N-E-W-S.com. And that's also our website. You can go to huffmannews.com and just read some more about us and see some pictures of my family and some of our ministry as well. If you go to the What's New section, you can read some of the latest updates about us as well.
And that's usually a little more extensive than the emails. You typically will put the, you'll add more pictures there and that.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd encourage people just to try it for a month or two. If you get tired of hearing from me, just tell me, and I'll stop sending it to you. But just try it.
Sure.
Or if you don't want to, you're concerned about offending me, you know, just hit the delete button. Don't read them. But I'd encourage you to check that out and just pray for us. This is a spiritual battle here. It's not easy to live here, right? You know, there's things that get frustrating often for us, and you know, trying to raise three teenage boys here is not easy as well. And living in a big, overly polluted city, concrete and street dogs and grouchy people, it's not been easy either. But
and just to give you a plug for the email, you do talk about some of that in the email from time to time, the street dogs and the like.
I try to give people a little taste of the culture.
Sure. I want to also just encourage people to get on the list, because there's a lot more that we didn't get into. You do take some trips occasionally out of Ukraine into other countries to do some other missions work humanitarian work, and you do a lot of good over there.
Yeah, you know, our focus here is really, you know, training the next generation, and so we are helping them. Demonstrating to them that Ukraine needs to be a sending country and sending missionaries, and so we are equipping and taking them with us, to do missions work from Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that we're doing here is just, you know, evangelism, certainly in our neighborhood, in hopes of planting a church here, and just trying to build up the existing churches and helping them raise the next generation of leaders. So that's what also has me at the university and working at this missionary training institute as well.
Sure.
And, you know, we're also looking for full-time missionaries. If you can speak English, we can use you here. And so that probably includes most of your users, or most of your listeners.
I would hope so.
And no matter what your age, you know, we have a retired man that works, not on our team, but works in Odessa with our agency, and, a retired postal carrier. He works, you know, all of his career for the post office, delivering news, delivering letters. And now he's over here spending his retirement, you know, doing, you know, he could be here serving Christ or, you know, over playing golf in Illinois, but he chose to come here. And, you know, what a great way to finish, to finish strong and to finish well. Our agency will help you get here. We'll train you before you come and get you equipped.
And what is the agency?
And send you over here. It's International Messengers. They're based out of Clear Lake, Iowa, and their website is internationalmessengers.org. Or you can get there from the link on our website too.
Sure,
or
I'll
check out
that
internationalmessengers.org.
Okay.
All right, great.
Well, I really want to thank you very much, Mark, and I thank the Lord for you and for all you do.
Thank you.
Thanks for putting up with the delay in the phone, though you're much more used to it than I am and that we are. But
I hope this sounds all right. We're, you know, it's about 6,000 miles away, so but it's a challenge, like, you know, to communicate as well. But I'm thankful for the internet phones, and it allows me to call people often when I need encouragement. There's some guys I meet, one guy especially that I meet with regularly. On the internet, it's a great source of encouragement for us.
Yeah, it's a great resource for you.
Can't imagine 100 years ago when it took, you know, a week to get communication from anybody. We're spoiled today.
Yeah.
So thank you, Andy. I appreciate your ministry. You're helping us.
Sure. But thank you very much.
Okay, keep up the good work here. Our pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much, just want to, again, encourage people to check out HuffmanNews.com and follow Mark and pray for him and email him some encouragement, and he appreciates it and he can use it. So once again, thank you very much, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me here. It's been a pleasure. God bless you and this ministry as well. Thank you so much, Andy, and all of your listeners there too.
Well, That wraps up episode 2. I just want to say that Mark was very humble in his response to my invitation to come on as a guest of Echo Zoe Radio. He didn't think he was the guy to interview, and I'm glad I convinced him otherwise, as I think he was a fabulous guest. Again, I thank Mark for coming on and sharing his experiences with us. Before we go, I would also like to issue another public thank you. Subsequent to initially publishing the previous episode, Associate Pastor Ryan Habana of Twin City Fellowship Church composed and recorded the intro music for the show. I want to thank Ryan, who did an amazing job. That's it for June. I'll be back in July for another episode. See you then.